Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to the first episode of WASAP, the Africa West Asia podcast. That stands for West Asia and Sub-Saharan African Partnerships in Flux, WASAP, the show in which we explore the fast-evolving partnerships between West Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. My name is Desiree Custers. I am a project manager with CARPO and one of your hosts. I have been working on the WASAP project for the past 2 years, and I'm very excited to kick off this series with you.
And I am Hubert Kinko, senior researcher at CARPO and member of the WASAP project team. Together, we will be guiding conversations on political, economic, cultural, as well as religious dynamics that shape relations between West Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. How ties between these two regions and actors within them are changing.
This podcast accompanies CARPO's research initiative known by its acronym, WASAP. That is, again, dear listener, the West Asia Sub-Saharan African Partnerships in Flux project. The project is funded by the Robert Bosch Foundation and runs from March 2024 until February 2027. In the project, we have a particular focus on several case study countries through which we illustrate more general trends in Gulf Africa relations. On the West Asia side, we focus on Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, Qatar, and Iran. And on the African side, we focus on South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya, and Ethiopia.
Throughout this series, we will bring in researchers, practitioners, and experts to unpack the latest developments, debates, and insights. These include economic ties, but also how Gulf Africa ties play out in conflict resolution on the African continent, as well as the role of sports diplomacy. Today, we will start with an introduction of the WASAP project itself, why it is so important, what we have done so far as a team, and then we'll zoom in on our latest study that examines the intersecting agencies in Gulf Africa relations.
The aim of our WASAP podcast is simple: to create a space where the WASAP team, that's us, and invited experts can share their research, reflect on latest developments, and break down challenges and opportunities emerging in relations between both regions. It is also part of our effort to make our work more accessible, not only to scholars and policymakers, but also to you, dear listener, and anyone who's curious about the topic. So, welcome again to this inaugural episode, and we hope you enjoy.
To kick things off, we would like to welcome Jan Hanrath, CEO of CARPO, to tell us about the Center for Applied Research in Partnership with the Orient. Such a mouthful, but in short, CARPO, that houses the WASAP project. Jan, please introduce CARPO, telling us about why it is the natural place to host such a project on Gulf Africa relations.
Thank you, Hubert. I'm very pleased to be part of this very first episode of the podcast. Well, CARPO, as you said, that is the Center for Applied Research in Partnership with the Orient. We are an independent research institute based in Bonn, Germany. Since our founding, we have focused on applied, policy-oriented research and dialogue formats that connect Europe with the Middle East. What defines CARPO is our partnership approach. We work closely with institutions and experts in the regions we study, combining academic depth and practical policy engagement. Over the past decade, our core work has centered on the Middle East and the Gulf region in particular, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, Iran, looking at economic transformation, regional diplomacy, and societal change. But in many of our projects, we began noticing something important. Actors in the Gulf were increasingly looking beyond their immediate neighborhood, particularly toward Africa. At the same time, African actors were engaging Gulf states in highly strategic ways, economically, politically, and even in security cooperation. We realized that these interactions were no longer side stories. They were becoming structural features of a shifting multipolar global order. Yet, research and policymaking often continued to treat both regions separately. That observation was the starting point of WASAP. CARPO was a natural home for this project because we already had the regional networks, the thematic expertise, and the dialogue formats to bring actors from both sides into one shared analytical space. WhatsApp allows us to connect the dots and to better understand how Gulf-Africa relations are reshaping wider geopolitical dynamics.
Well, thank you, Ian, for setting the scene and outlining some of CARPO's broader mission and work, and how CARPO's approach gave life to our WhatsApp project. So without further ado, I would like us to now jump into the WhatsApp project itself.
To help us explore how WhatsApp came about and what drives the project, we are joined by our third team member, Dr. Sebastian Zons. Sebastian, welcome.
Thank you so much, Desiree and Hubert, for having me. It's really a great pleasure, and I'm looking very much forward to this journey together with you. My name is Sebastian Zons. I'm senior researcher with CARPO and, of course, part of the great WhatsApp team. I'm mainly focusing on the security policies, the geoeconomic and geopolitical engagement of Gulf states such as Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Qatar in specific parts of the world, not only in Africa. I'm also very much interested in the socioeconomic transformation that those states are undergoing, and of course also the social transition they are seeing themselves in. And lately, as I'm a big football fan, of course, I'm also focusing on sport diplomacy in the Gulf. And as you already mentioned, Hubert, this will also become a topic of our podcast in later episodes. So stay tuned, and thank you again for having me.
Thank you, Sebastian, for that wonderful introduction. I would say maybe let's start at the beginning and maybe discuss why we as a team are interested in relations between West Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. To start with myself, I've spent the better part of my childhood in several African countries, and I've noticed from an early age that there is a relationship with the Gulf, for example, the Arabic language, but also cultural similarities, etc. And this thing that I noticed became more prominent when later in life I started studying Arabic and busied myself with developments in the Middle East. Nevertheless, I also noticed that, especially from a European perspective, the two regions are considered as distinct. There is Africa, the African continent, and there is the Middle East and the Gulf as part of that. This is why I think a project like WhatsApp is important, because it emphasizes a different perspective on relations between the Gulf and Africa. How have you come to see these relations since you have been working on the WhatsApp project?
Thank you, Desiree. And of course, for me, it's also a very, very interesting topic due to the fact that sometimes, as you already mentioned, both regions seem to act in silos and are not very well connected with each other. At least this is the outside perspective, but definitely this is not true, as there are very strong historical cultural links, there are migration flows, and definitely, for instance, for a country such as Saudi Arabia, the western side of the Red Sea is its direct neighborhood, and it is extremely important for security, economic, and political reasons. So in our WhatsApp project, it is for me extremely interesting not only to learn more about how those regions see each other and how they are engaging with each other, but also how stakeholders, researchers, politicians, NGO representatives, and others are communicating with each other. And I think one of the greatest experiences in this project was to see that colleagues from Saudi, from the UAE, from South Africa, from Nigeria, Ethiopia, are getting in touch with each other and know each other better. And I think of dialogue is definitely also a strategic goal, which we all have in our projects. And I think in the WhatsApp project, that's extremely relevant and for me personally, a very, very interesting adventure.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. If you look over the last couple of years, as part of the project, we have organized or been invited to multiple workshops, conferences, high-level events. We've also held working group meetings across both regions in some of the specific countries that you have mentioned. Please, could you tell our listeners a bit more about some of these activities?
Yeah, once we started the project, I think We have done a lot of very fascinating work, and this work is related mainly to two dimensions. Is firstly, to really play the role of a bridge builder and to connect people from both regions with each other by providing platforms, organizing workshops, as you already mentioned. So we have been to Nairobi, we have been to Ethiopia, we have been to Joburg in South Africa. We are traveling frequently to the Gulf region in order to learn more about their perspectives on Africa and vice versa. And by establishing working groups and, of course, also by bringing excellent intellectual talents and minds together, we really want to highlight what those regions have in common and what are their shared interests, not only focusing on risks and challenges, but also on opportunities in collaboration. And this plays out in the African Gulf corridor, but of course, also it is extremely relevant for us here in Europe, for Germany and other European countries. So therefore, in our activities and our research, we always want to bring in this threefold dimension. So to look into the regions, but also to understand what are implications for Europe. And in this regard, we do not only organize events and we bring people together, and we have established very strong partnerships, for instance, with Wits University in Johannesburg or with the University of Nairobi in Kenya. But we are also conducting research and have published a couple of studies, and we will talk about that in a minute. But we also give young talents, students and others, the chance to present their research results and also to create more ownership when it comes to their voices, to listen more to voices from Africa, from the Gulf region, and to really integrate them into the broader global community of research and discussion. And this is particularly for me also personally a very, very fascinating goal this project has, and I'm grateful to be part of it.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. You did mention visits to the Gulf and to some African countries, but I also know that there were some important meetings and activities held in Europe, whether it's Brussels or Berlin. Would you like to say a bit about these as well?
Yeah, thank you for reminding me of those two great events we had last year. So we organized one expert roundtable in Berlin, which is my hometown. So it was great to welcome you and a couple of colleagues from the African continent and the Gulf here in Berlin. And at that time, we were quite lucky with the weather. Sometimes it's extremely annoying to be in Berlin with regards to the weather, but this was great and beautiful. So we gathered a group of policymakers from different ministries, from political foundations, from other institutions to discuss with them the results of our most recent study, and also to shed more light on why is this Gulf-African relationship also important for a country such as Germany. I mean, Germany is very much engaged on the African continent. It is also reaching out to the Gulf states for economic and for security reasons. So therefore, it is also of high importance for policymakers here in Germany to learn more about the different dynamics between both regions. And we did something similar in Brussels a couple of days later. And we met with colleagues from the European Union, from the Commission, from different divisions within the EU, and discussed with them also the role of the EU in Africa, in the Gulf, and how such a project could also contribute to more effective policymaking from the EU side in those regions. So I think here, this trilateral dimension of bringing together African and Gulf players with European stakeholders is also a unique selling point of the project and brings more added value to the whole debate.
Thank you, Sebastian. Thank you very much for speaking to us a little bit about the project activities up until now. And you mentioned our collaboration with the University of Nairobi, especially students there writing some papers on how they see Gulf relations with Sub-Saharan Africa. And these will be published soon in a Carpo publication. So, dear listeners, look out for that. And in Nairobi, that's where you, Uber, were based at the time. So I would just like to briefly bring you in and ask you how you have become interested in relations between West Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa.
Sure, Desiree, thank you very much. A lot of the knowledge production that links the rest of the world with Africa has often sidelined Africa, has put Africa on the margins, sometimes referring to states and enterprises and societies as being acted upon instead of as agents themselves capable of acting and shaping outcomes. And this has been a central theme in all the work that I've done over the last 10 years. I have tried as much as possible to center Africa within some of these dynamics, but Africa as a continent with actors that have agency. And so this project is really important for me because it allows for us to be able to show the various levels of agency, the way it is exercised, the kinds of agents across multiple levels within these dynamics. And so this is the part about the project that very much excites me.
Well, that's great. Thank you, Hubert. That drives me to the question about agency, because this has become really one of the central concepts in the WhatsApp project. And one of our major written outputs has been a study that we authored together, Hubert, Sebastian, and myself, which was published in November of last year with the title Agency in Flux: Networkability, Maneuverability, and Leverageability Between West Asia and Sub-Sahara Africa. And in this study, we focused on how actors in both regions exercise different forms of agency within their evolving partnerships. And the study is quite innovative in terms of providing a kind of new lens for making sense of the strategic nature of Gulf Africa relations, namely the NML nexus. To be very brief, I know it seems that within this project we really like acronyms, but just to briefly explain it to the listeners, NML stands for networkability, maneuverability, and leverageability. Networkability referring to the capacity of actors, both state and non-state, to form, sustain, and utilize networks for particular goals, whether they be foreign policy goals, economic or security, or even cultural goals. Maneuverability here refers to the ability of state and non-state actors to strategically position themselves within international relations to influence outcomes and pursue goals through diplomatic maneuvering, economic strategies, and also political strategies such as hedging. And the last letter, which is L, standing for leverageability, refers to the ability of state and non-state actors to use leverageability or their leverage to influence the behavior of other actors by strategically exploiting their dependencies and vulnerabilities. So having laid out a little bit of the conceptual background of this nexus or this lens, I would like to invite you, Sebastian, to maybe explain to the listeners a little bit more how we used this framework in the context of Gulf Africa relations.
Thank you, Desiree. And honestly, I don't have too much to add because you excellently outlined what the NML nexus is. Maybe just a couple of thoughts on this. From our point of view, it's always kind of a challenge to really digest what is happening in terms of complex relations between both regions, because it is extremely multi-layered. It is going on so many different levels, politically, socially, economically, security related. And therefore, it has become extremely complicated to make sense what is going on. So therefore, the NML nexus is the lens we look through in order to deconstruct on which levels particular relationships between particular actors from both regions are taking place. So sometimes there is a tendency to consider Africa as a country and not as a number of countries, and to consider the different perspectives, societal views, political standpoints as a monolithic bloc. And this is very similar also for the Gulf states or for West Asian countries. So when we look into Saudi Arabia, there is the tendency that interests are very much similar to Oman, for instance, or UAE is acting in a similar way as Qatar. And this is not the case, at least not always. So there are differences, there are divergences, there are competition and rivalry playing out. And of course, this needs to be taken into consideration. And I think what we did with the NML nexus is exactly to find a concept that makes our life a little bit more easier to look into specific spheres, into specific fields of action in which the different forms of cooperation, of competition or co-optation are taking place. And still, it sounds a little bit theoretical, but I think in our study, we outlined a number of very concrete examples to highlight where the NML nexus plays out and what does it mean also for us as analysts, but also for policymakers to make more sense of this very complex and multidimensional network between the Gulf and the sub-Saharan African region.
Thank you, Sebastian. Broadly speaking, how do Gulf states engage with the African continent as a whole, also particularly with respect to some specific countries, and what strategies drive their actions?
Yeah, it's of course a very difficult question because there is no size-fits-all approach. So as I already said, Gulf states don't act as a monolithic block, so they all are following different strategies, approaches, and networks. And I think that's extremely interesting when we are using the NML nexus. So for instance, take flexible communication lines as an example. It's very important to highlight that Gulf-African relations are not only based on official or institutionalized networks. They are oftentimes also very personalized, very individual. So if there are particular people who have good networks to other people on the other side of the Red Sea, then they can definitely play out more leverage. Then they have more agency. It goes more rapid. It is faster than, for instance, institutionalized networks. And in this regard, personalities matter. And those personalities are not only politicians. They are sometimes close advisors to the leaders on the Gulf, for instance. Sometimes they are business people. Sometimes they are both. And this is a very interesting hybrid model of personalized interconnectivity. So those diplopreneurs, the guys who are working in business as well as in diplomacy, are definitely also driving African Gulf relations. And one prominent example, which we also highlight in our study, is Sheikh Shahbud bin Nahyan Al Nahyan, a member of the UAE's ruling family and a businessman. He was appointed in 2021 as the first Minister of State for African Affairs. And he has, of course, cultivated a broad network across the continent. So this is not a strategy, but these personal relations are definitely one instrument how Gulf-African relations play out, and there are a number of other examples. But when it comes to the different strategies, also let me mention maybe three examples by focusing on the main Gulf actors on the African continent, which is Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Qatar. And starting with Saudi Arabia, its engagement is shaped by the Red Sea as its strategic hinterland. So as I said before, for Saudi Arabia, the Horn of Africa on the other side of the Red Sea is direct neighborhood. It's not far away. So therefore, Riyadh has to recalibrate its engagement. It has to engage on a diplomatic, on an economic level. It cannot just impose something on the region because it is so closely intertwined with it. And the Horn of Africa security is at the same time Saudi Arabia's security. So therefore, it is investing into diplomacy, into diplomatic de-escalation, but also, of course, it is investing into mining, agriculture, sectors vital for food security and economic diversification. The UAE is maybe the most prominent example when it comes to the Gulf engagement in Africa, and in particular at the Horn of Africa. And it's, of course, also a very controversial role the UAE is playing in a couple of contexts. What I think describes the UAE's strategy at best is its investment security nexus. So we see a couple of UAE companies such as DP World or AD Ports who are constructing a string of ports across East and Southern Africa by integrating these corridors into a wider connectivity network that links the Indian Ocean to the Mediterranean. And therefore, some observers are framing the UAE as a new Venice, because it has established this string of ports from its Jebel Ali port throughout the whole region. And here, of course, the Red Sea and the rest of the African continent plays a very important role in terms of interconnectivity. So therefore, the UAE are investing into ports concession. They are building maritime infrastructure, and therefore they also want to gain more influence and more leverage on players in Africa for geoeconomic and security reasons. And Qatar, finally, is also pursuing an interesting strategy with regards to Africa, which is quite recent, I would say, whereas the UAE is much more active in Africa for, I would argue, 2 decades now. Qatar started just maybe 10 years ago to really invest diplomatically into the African continent. And as Qatar has promoted itself as an honest broker, as a mediator, as a bridge builder when it comes to regional conflicts, it also do the same in African conflicts. For instance, its mediation between Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo stands out here. And it also invests heavily in physical infrastructure, such as airports, telecommunications, but also renewable projects. So what I wanted to say here is there is no one strategy that is played out by all the Gulf states. They are using different strategies and different ways. And sometimes those ways are on the same track. And sometimes, of course, there are diverging interests at play.
Thank you, Sebastian. I appreciate you outlining some of the differences between the Gulf strategies because, as you mentioned, we sometimes have the tendency to look at Africa as one country, but also to look at the Gulf as one country. So I think it's important that you outline some of the different strategies and this term that you mentioned, the diplopreneurs. This is a very interesting phenomenon that I'm sure we will look more into maybe in some of the future episodes. But as you described the strategies of the Gulf, one thing that came to mind also, as Hubert mentioned, is the asymmetries existing between the Gulf and Africa. So many would say, okay, in your study, you look at, for example, agency by African countries, but what does that mean in light of such powerful Gulf actors? How would you respond to this question or to such criticism?
Yeah, I think the question of asymmetric relations is key to our research, but it's of course also key to the character of Gulf-African relations per se. And in general terms, I would argue that none of those players consider themselves as pure and passive recipients of Gulf engagement. So there is a growing self-confidence among the African continent, of course, also in the Gulf region. They consider themselves as emerging middle powers in a so-called global South, and they really want to play a role in the international arena. So therefore, this holds also true for African states, as they today engage with multiple partners at the same time. And this requires, as I said, self-confidence, pragmatism, but also a strategic clarity, not only to partners such as Europe or the US or China, but of course also to the Gulf states. And this is, I think, one element that is sometimes overlooked, that yes, there are asymmetric levels of engagement, and I will come to that in a second. But there are also entry points for African countries to preserve their own interests and to really have agency and leverage on their Gulf partners, because the Gulf cannot act alone. They really need partnerships. They need networks. They serve as platforms. And you need always to tango, right? So, and in this regard, Africa has become, or the African continent has become, much more prominent when it comes to the strategic interlinkage and interconnectivity with the Gulf region. However, there are still asymmetric power play at place. And this is definitely the case when we look into some investments of the Gulf states in African countries. So those transactional investments can sideline African agency and can further undermine governance, resilience, and long-term development. And in this context, Gulf problems frequently become also African problems, especially in fragile regions. And nowhere is this clearer than in the Horn of Africa, where rivalries among the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar have spilled over into local politics, as we see, for instance, in Sudan, where the UAE and Saudi Arabia are supporting opposing players in this brutal and devastating civil war. We also see that the current relationship between the UAE and Saudi Arabia has become extremely difficult and has also resulted in open rivalry. This spills over to the Horn of Africa and undermines social resilience and regional stability there, as we can see, for instance, in Somalia or Somaliland. And this moment we have at the moment, where UAE-Saudi rivalry is at its peak, reminds me sometimes on the situation we had between 2017 and 2021, when there was the so-called Gulf crisis, in which Qatar was boycotted and blockaded by its neighboring countries such as UAE and Saudi Arabia, and that this also played out on the African continent when African governments were pushed from their Gulf partners to take sides, which contributed to political fragmentation in Somalia, Sudan, Ethiopia, or Djibouti, to only mention a couple of examples. And there is also a second concern that relates to the Gulf's economy-first approach, We heard it a lot from our partners on the African continent that they, on the one hand, appreciate that there are investments coming from the Gulf to the continent. But on the other hand, they consider them as a new colonial dynamic imposed by the Gulf on African countries. So that this is not in their advantage, that this is not in African benefit. It is more for the self-interest of the Gulf. And this includes large-scale land acquisitions that have been criticized for displacing communities, degrading environments, and compromising land rights. So this land grabbing is definitely of concern, of great concern. And similar concerns exist with regards to the situation of African labor migrants working in the Gulf, who are still suffering from structural violence, from high migration costs, from social uncertainties, although we have seen some reforms with regards to labor rights in the Gulf. But still, this structural abusive situation constitutes also a very critical perspective inside Africa or inside African societies on the Gulf. And I think we definitely have to take the pros and cons into consideration. Not everything what the Gulf is doing in Africa is bad, but not always is good, at least when it comes to African agency and ownership. And in our project, we really want to highlight the different nuances of this very complex relationship.
Thank you, Sebastian. I think Hubert and myself couldn't have wished for a better first guest for our inaugural episode. For this podcast, you have mentioned many, many topics that we will continue to explore in this podcast series, among them migration, but also the economic and security ties. And I think you will be back later in this series to talk about sports diplomacy.
Yay, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
So are we.
Yes, Sebastian, we are very much looking forward to welcoming you back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you also to Jan, CEO of Carpo, for joining us and explaining about Carpo.
Thank you. The pleasure was all mine. It was great to be on this episode.
So, dear listener, if we have spiked your interest and curiosity, please visit the Carpo website to learn more about the WhatsApp project, but also to find the study on agency that we have spoken about.
Thank you for joining us for this introductory episode of the WhatsApp, the Africa West Asia podcast. We do look forward to bringing you more discussions, insights, and expert interviews as we continue to explore the complexities of West Asia Sub-Saharan Africa partnerships in flux.
So, dear listeners, stay tuned and follow Carpo on LinkedIn and Instagram to keep up with our events, publications, and WhatsApp updates. See you in the next episode.